This morning, the Israel Report. It's with Julian Resnick. Julian, we haven't spoken for a while. How are you doing?
Well, you know you're not supposed to ask that question of those of us who live in Israel.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. Although I'm hoping today you're doing a bit better.
Well, I have to tell you, I was listening in to your program about the rugby socks.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, if only I could talk to you now about rugby socks.
Absolutely. Wouldn't that
be? That would be great.
Yep, that is true. Okay, so it's been just an incredible period. Let's talk about living through the 12-day war as it is now going to be known.
You know, so I wanted to actually read you something that somebody in my family wrote this morning, because I really, you know, this is going to be a very personal thing this morning. It's not going to be, you know, looking at it through the lens of geopolitics or anything. So a very close friend was supposed to come and visit, as he does often, to Israel and stay downstairs in our little, on the kibbutz. We have a spare room in our place on the kibbutz.
Right.
And he just canceled because his flights were canceled. And this was written by a member of my family. Oi, David, that really is so sad and disappointing, even though not surprising. We're all licking our wounds after what we just went through, pretending we're back to some kind of normalcy, but we're not. And everything we plan keeps on changing and turning around. I was supposed to be in London this week and then taking the train to Glasgow to meet Maya and Ronnie for a conference that Maya was to speak at. That's my daughter who speaks on education in different parts of the world. I was really looking forward to your visit, just spending time together talking. So what has it been like, Howard? So, you know, I wanted to, you know, describe almost scenes from a bomb shelter.
Right, right.
So, you get the way that it's worked in the last 12 days. There's a 10-minute warning because Iran is far away. You have 10 minutes to prepare. You know that missiles have been launched from Iran. It's a bizarre feeling that people have launched missiles to kill you. You have 10 minutes to organize. And then when the siren goes off, a minute and a half. And so I will describe being in the bomb shelter as lots of anxiety in the bomb shelter that we go to on the kibbutz, which is not far away at all. It takes us about a minute to get in from where we live on the kibbutz. About over 40 people arrive, including some breastfeeding going on sometimes, lots of little babies and children. Happily in Israel, we have many of them. There's lots of anxiety. There's a feeling of community. We cleaned up after a day or two. We brought down chairs and mattresses and all types of things. And then there's the dark humor that develops. Everybody has the jokes that you tell. One of the jokes that I told was that a wealthy friend of mine in America was complaining about the price of gas about to go up in America. And I said in the shelter one day, maybe I'll pass around the hat. So while we're sitting in the bomb shelter, we can, you know,
collect money,
$10 to help the friends in the States whose petrol is going to cost more. Then there is bewilderment with the world, not understanding. I have to say, I have many, many friends from my work in the Jewish communities in New York, in San Francisco, in London, in many parts of the world. I cannot understand how some of them are relating to this. I just don't get it. There is support, of course. There's some wonderful support, but there are also people who can't understand why we decided that we had to really deal with this existential threat that I cannot get my head around. And then there is this bizarre Israeli resilience. There is this amazing thing, you know, you probably know Aroma cafes in Israel. So one of them had their windows blown out by one of the missiles landing. And the next day, even before they had windows back in, they were serving cappuccino, known as afuch in Israel, and baked goods. So there is this, there's a range of experiences going on. But I think that possibly the most powerful part of the experience over here that people really have to appreciate and understand, and I know it's hard to from a distance, things are not going to ever be what they were in Israel. I think what people have to understand, that after the 7th of October, this is now a new world over here. So the last 12 days might be the 12-day war, but it's a continuation of this over a year and a half now of this incredible struggle that we're going through. The world has changed. The world for us has changed. And I think that, you know, I'm going to be in South Africa in November with a group of Americans. I'm hoping I'll meet with you personally then.
Lovely.
And one of the things that I say to the people, no matter where I'm guiding, I'm going to be guiding in Warsaw on Sunday, hopefully, if my flight gets out of here. I see everything through different eyes now. I just see everything through different eyes.
Right. How, in terms of the, I mean, I'm sure everybody does, because you've all, as a collective, as a country, everybody's been through something very, very significant. What happens in terms of Gaza, in terms of the hostages? Does this impact how the push towards some form of resolution there is concerned?
So I want to say one thing before we talk about Gaza, just for a minute. I want to just talk about the children, because I know that many of your listeners might be people who have children or grandchildren. And
right.
I have four of my grandchildren were with me on the kibbutz during this last 12 days. And I've just one little sentence that one of my five-year-old, my son-in-law, was called up as soon as Israel delivered its first blow in Iran, and she overheard a conversation. We obviously try and keep some conversations away from the little ones, that seven soldiers had been killed the day the 12 days ended. And she turned to my daughter and asked her, "Did Abba die? Did Daddy die?" Mm. And when you hear a child say that, it's big. It really is. Because you realize that the children, even though you're trying to protect the little ones, are walking around with these unbelievable anxieties. And the children on the other side of this are, it's going to take a huge amount of healing.
It is.
Hostages and Gaza, look, so I, you know, there are different opinions about this. And I always try and be upfront and honest with you that there's not a single opinion in Israel. It seems to be, according to the statistics that they showed on the television and the ratings, when they checked out how people feel, it seems to be an overwhelming percentage of Israelis say the war just has to end in Gaza. You know, even if it isn't the scenario that some people wanted, the last movement to look like in Gaza, it has to end. I just think that there is no more. In terms of the soldiers, in terms of the energy, in terms of the ability to keep on going, I think we have reached almost the end of our tether. Some people would disagree with me on this, and I want you to know that, and I want your listeners to know that. But I think we are desperate to end this war, and we are desperate to get the hostages back. And I know the counter arguments. If Hamas stays in power, there'll be more October 7th.
Right.
I think that one of the things that I think we've learned a few things. One of the things we've learned is that we made terrible mistakes in Gaza before October 7th. And I'm not going to talk about who's to blame now. You know, we're not going to do a blaming game. But I think that our eye will be on the ball differently with respect to Gaza. But I think it's time for this to come to an end and for the bodies to be brought back, and hopefully for the 20 Israeli hostages who are still alive to return home.
Yeah,
I think that's just almost everybody's wish and prayer. Not everyone, but almost everyone.
Yeah. So in terms of the war itself, is there optimism in terms of a resolution in Gaza?
I think there is optimism. I think that there is some level of optimism. The bizarre thing is that the resolution is going to involve America. It's not going to be Israel and the Palestinians or Israel and Gaza. It's clearly going to be an American negotiated end to this, which of course brings up all types of questions about our dependence, our independence. But I think that people ultimately actually don't care. Mm. And it doesn't matter what opinion people have about President Trump. I think everybody is just, not everybody, almost everybody so much wants this to come to an end that we'll take an American negotiated settlement. We'll accept the fact that it wasn't our leadership and our government that brings us to resolution, but it's going to be imposed upon us from outside. I think that is what's going to happen. We are seeing I say this to people all the time now. Let's put aside our strong personal opinions about different politicians and different leaders. The crucial thing is now, it's not whether I'm for Trump or against Trump, or whether I'm for Netanyahu or against Netanyahu. Let's somehow put that aside for the moment and agree that we have to bring this to an end.
100%.
And I think, by the way, in terms of our healing going forward, if we don't find a way to put aside some of our very, very strong commitments with respect to who we stand behind and who we are actually in total opposition to, if we don't manage to do that, we're not going to heal. We are not going to heal. And healing is crucial over here, absolutely crucial.